WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Atlanta. It's always so nice to be home. I was in Michigan this week with the family, and it was... Now, I know it's been hot here since I've been gone, and it was hot before I left, and it's hot while I was gone, and it's still hot today. I almost thought it was a joke. Looking at the weather, 95 today, 97 for tomorrow. I mean, where does that even come from? And the weird part about it, it's so difficult to get adjusted to it, it was 68 to about 72 for the week. When we were up all the way northern Michigan, which is not the Upper Peninsula, which is effectively Canada, but the northern part. Michigan looks like a glove. So this would be on the, let's call it the third finger or fourth finger, is where Michigan and Traverse, or where Leland and Traverse City would be. So it's north and it's on the water. So not only is it north and it's near Canada, so it's cooler, but then you've got the water to cool it down another 5 to 10 degrees. And so we had this week where it was 70 degrees the whole time. And when you're outside with your kids, and I have 3 boys, and they're always, in fact, they're best to be outside, of course, running around doing something, fishing. We did a lot of fishing. And when it's that temperature, you can just hang out. You can be outside, and it's fine. It's just great. It's fine. But when you come here, and it's 95 degrees in the summer, we came to the airport, Hartsfield Jackson. We're going on the little tram to get to baggage claim, and I think the air conditioner is broken, or maybe it was working full speed and just because it was just completely overpowered. But it was 100 degrees in that little tram, and then I walk outside, I felt like a vampire seeing the light for the first time in 1,000 years melting. And I guess Thank goodness for air conditioning here in the South, or else I don't know where we would be. But it's just oppressive right now. But it feels good right here in the studio here at WSB Radio. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Remember, we have a carathon coming up on Monday and Tuesday, where we rely on you, our listeners, here every year to raise money for the Aflac Cancer Center. We've been doing it for many, many years now. And starting tomorrow morning with Scott Slade, Atlanta Morning News, we'll be kicking off the carathon once again. So you'll hear me talk about that today. I actually have an interview about the carathon coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. And we will get going. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I want to remind you as an audience, because you are why the carathon works. So tune in for that Monday and Tuesday throughout the day. So there's so much happened this week, of course, and most of it was good. I typically do my highlights and I do lowlights, and we've had a lot of 2015 that it's been a split decision where I might have 4 or 5 highlights and I have 4 or 5 lowlights, or I'll have 2 or 3 highlights or have trouble finding any highlights, and then I'll have 5 or 6 lowlights. So we've had a lot of bad and disturbing news in the news cycle, or in the headline news cycle in 2015. It's really put a cap on the market. Of course, we continue to talk about Greece, and there was a huge development this week, obviously, with Greece, and that's why, and things went, as far as stability is concerned, the decisions that were made go towards stability, at least in the short term, called a big Band-Aid, and the markets liked it. We saw a little stability, at least this is all for now, in China, and we saw markets rally because of that. So we had a lot of reprieve this week, and markets rallied in the 2% range. But I want to talk through a lot of what happened. Plus, the phone lines are open. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ryan just says go right to people are calling, and we didn't even say the phone number. I don't know if that's a good sign or not. Usually that means people are going to call and yell at me. But we'll do that. Let's go to the phones, according to Ryan Ely. David at Sandy Springs. David, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Good morning. I have a daughter that has a college loan, and the interest rate is about 3.5%. And she also has some stock that I purchased for her many, many years ago that would virtually wipe that out. But I'm wondering, at 3.5%, would she be better off to hold on to the stock and just make the monthly payments?
Well, you've got to consider a couple of things here. First of all, taxes. Is this an IRA for her or a regular account, custodial account?
It's just a regular stock account.
What stock, David, what stock are we talking?
Home Depot.
Yeah, I wouldn't sell Home Depot, and I would encourage her. First of all, 3.5% is about...
I know, it's pretty low.
Yeah, it's pretty low, and there's a lot of options for anybody else out there listening. That's a really great student loan rate, obviously. You've heard of 5 and 6 and 7% rates because of what's happening with student loans. There's a company called SoFi, David, and your daughter doesn't need this, but SoFi is a private company that emerged a couple of years back that helps students. They started with med students. They were paying high interest on their student loans, and they went to them and they said, look, we'll buy the debt. We'll effectively buy the debt, resell it, and give it to you at a much lower rate. So they effectively came in and refinanced what they considered really good credit, med students who knew were going to be very employable. Hey, these guys are going to pay back their loans. You don't need to pay 7% anymore. You can pay 3. So there's been a lot of development within the student loan world from a business perspective. But in your case here, I would encourage her, David, to try to encourage her to never sell Home Depot. I say that slightly jokingly, but really I think the lesson here for her will be, if she looks at that stock as sacred stock that she can't touch, that she cannot touch, it'll be worth a lot of money when she's really a grown up and she really needs it. I think that college kids, they think they might need money. I have to have this because I need to pay my rent, or I need to buy a new iPhone. I need to buy books. Those are all important things, but they're not as important as leaving that money compound. And if she can get if you can teach her to look at that in a way where she holds on to that for dear life and sells it and never sells it or only sells it in a grave emergency, then I bet you she'll look up at you when she's an adult, you know, and she's 35 or 40, and she sees the light of the world, and she'll thank you and say, Dad, you know what? That was a good call to not sell my Home Depot stock. She can afford to pay the 3.5% interest. If she used it for school, it's a good investment, but I would be really careful. I would really teach her not to sell. Not to mention, you're going to have to pay a capital gain tax. Now, if she's in a really low bracket, if she's in the 5% tax bracket, which she probably is as a student, she probably has a zero capital gain rate anyway, so it's not a huge concern. But I think the real lesson here you've got to look at is the ability to hang on to that stock and not sell it and let the compounding work over time. If it's a really low basis and you are have an income, let's say $75,000, $100,000, and you're in a above the 15% tax bracket, then you're going to have to pay capital gain rates of 15% on the gain. You buy something for 10, you sell it for 20, you have a capital gain tax that's 15% for most people of 15%. Then, of course, that capital gain tax gets even higher as we get into the very top tax bracket. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. Going to Jim, who joins us from Fayetteville. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I need to ask your phone screener fell on the floor before he put me back on the air, but I was wondering if
Jim, he's just getting up now, so what was the question?
If there is such a bond that pays dividends that is not real risky, because I know it's a risk, in excess of 8% a year, because I am looking to take selling a piece of real estate, and I'm going to be retiring next year, and I'm going to have about $55,000 that I'm currently netting about $500 a month from, and after expenses, blah, 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 blah. I would be happy if I could get a $375, $400 a month return on it if, you know, there was a
So you're looking for 8%, Jim. You're looking for 8%. Well, the answer is, and yeah, Ryan is still reeling in there. He's turned a light shade of light lime green. But that, it really just depends. I used to talk a lot, I should probably talk more about what we used to call here the yield ladder. And if you think of it this way, the bottom of the ladder, Jim, and these are, you can look at securities, at the bottom of the ladder have the lowest risk. You're on the first rung, you fall off, no big deal, you're not going to fall very far, but you're only going to get about 1% interest in today's environment. You go up to the second rung and you're getting 2.5%. Again, you fall off, you're not going to get hurt all that bad. But as you continue to climb rung after rung on that ladder, your yield's going up another 3 and then 4 and then 5. Where if you're up, let's call it on the fifth or sixth rung, you get into what are called high yield bonds. In today's interest rate environment, you're going to get between 5 and 6.5% in a very liquid, highly diversified junk bond fund. Junk, the proverbial word, it's not necessarily, doesn't mean these companies are terrible, doesn't mean they're going out of business. It just means they have lousy credit and they have to pay a little bit more on that credit. Meaning that they're going to pay you 5 to 6.5%. You go beyond that, you get into the 7.5, 8, 9% range. Plenty of securities out there that'll do that. There are hundreds that'll pay you in the 8% range. But it doesn't mean it comes without risk. And you've got to remember that over time, stock markets, which are, again, if you look at it on a risk continuum, the stock market or equities, that's the highest level of risk you can take. That's only returned about 9 or 10%. So when you're looking at 8, you're getting to the very high end of the risk continuum. You could look at the mortgage REITs, like a company like Annaly, you're going to get double digit yields. But it doesn't mean that that company's share price can't get hit pretty significantly in an economic environment that isn't favorable. So sure, you can find 8% all day, you can find 10% all day, but it's not going to happen without risk. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
And AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Good Sunday morning. Remember the Carathon is coming up on Monday and Tuesday. It is a long-standing tradition at WSB as we raise money for the Aflac Cancer Center at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. On with me in the next at the bottom of the hour at 9:37, 9:38. We're going to have on Mary McCormick. Mary is the director of the Children's Legacy Advisor Program. That helps professionals, attorneys, CPAs, guys like me, wealth management, CFPs, certified financial planners, to help talk to their clients about different ways that are beneficial for the family, the estate, and also for the legacy gifting program for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So we're going to talk about some of those strategies that Mary can talk us through and advise us on that relate back to the Carathon that's going to start on Monday. So, of course, you've got Scott Slade that's going to kick that off. We've got, of course, all of our hosts. You've got Herman Cain on with John Schmoltz, actually. Schmoltz is on, I want to say, at 11 o'clock on Tuesday. I'm going to get the schedule out and talk about that in the next, at the bottom of the half hour. So, stay tuned. And then, of course, your calls and money questions. We'll get back to that. Lots happening in the world. Greece, we'll call it Season 3, Episode 12, Greece Debt Bailout. One of the most tremendous weeks we've ever seen from an internet company. Let's talk about Google and why they're bigger than the market cap of Google is bigger than most countries' GDP on the planet. All of that straight ahead. More on Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
Let's just do one or two calls here. We'll start with Shane. How can we help, my friend?
Hi, Wes. Thanks for all your insight and contributions, my friend.
Pleasure. How can I help?
I am 40 years old and contribute to a Roth IRA each year through Vanguard. And historically, I've done exclusively mutual funds. But I hear you and others talk quite often about ETFs, and, you know, my retirement horizon is 25, 30 years, perhaps. And, you know, if you're me, what are you doing with your $5,500 a year?
So, Shane, there's a couple of thoughts here that remember this, that ETFs are really just the evolution of index funds. So index funds were invented in the early 70s. Effectively, John Bogle from Vanguard, he's the one that really brought them to the mainstream. The whole premise behind index funds is that most actively managed funds don't beat the index anyway. 80% of them don't beat the index. Sure, 20% do. But over time, if you can have a really low-cost index, it's a very efficient way to invest. You're never going to have the very best return because there's always somebody out there that is beating the index. But you're going to have at least an average return, but an average return in an index fund is still above average because it beats most actively managed mutual funds. So it took a very long time for that concept to really catch on. Some people live by it. They live and die by it. Others will still always want to do a little better than the market, and that's why there's always going to be a market for actively managed mutual funds, actively managed, which now you can actually buy an actively managed ETF. Hedge funds are a multi-trillion-dollar industry. So it's really just there's all these different flavors of investments depending on your philosophy. My philosophy is to, one of my core philosophies beyond diversification and the bucket approach we like to talk about here on the show, and income-oriented investing, knowing that you have a certain level of cash flow from dividends and interest and distributions that equal to a portfolio yield or cash flow that's very manageable and predictable relative to a very otherwise very unpredictable stock market. So cash flow is really important in my opinion, but as far as the vehicles we can use today, if as long as you're an index fund investor, index mutual funds are totally fine. They're absolutely fine. It's that now an ETF has come in, exchange traded fund, and they have the same principles or same characteristics as an index mutual fund. They're just slightly more evolved, meaning that you can buy them and sell them throughout the day just like you would a stock. So they're still very low cost. You still have a basket of securities, stocks, bonds, real estate investment trusts, MLPs. There's lots of different, again, varieties of ETFs as they've evolved over the last 15 plus years. So you don't have to switch over to ETFs, but they are a really good vehicle. So if I'm in a Roth IRA like you, I'd probably look at using Vanguard ETFs and iShare ETFs and State Street ETFs, all the big ETF families there's lots to choose from. They're good low cost investments, and you can really pick your spots in the market. So you can have a all growth ETF, or you can have a very dividend heavy ETF like DVY, or a dividend growing ETF like SDY, or you can have a specific sector like financials XLF or XLU, the utility oriented ETF. So it's a really efficient way to pick your spots and get really specific if you want to, or just look at some of the big broad ETFs like Vanguard Dividend Appreciation ETF, symbol VIG, that gives you access to about 181 different dividend growing stocks. So there's a lot to choose from. You don't have to just switch over tomorrow, but it really is an efficient way to manage money for the long term in a low-cost way. And that's why I'm such a advocate of people understanding and starting to utilize ETFs. Because in the long run, that's what they check the boxes for all the items that are really important for you as an investor over a long, long period of time. Brian joins us on the line. Brian, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Yes, I work for UPS, and I was just wondering what a good retirement plan would be, because I've heard that you pay so much money in fees if you do like a 401k with the company.
Well, a couple of thoughts here. I mean, UPS obviously is a gigantic company, and typically these gigantic companies, their 401k plans are not that expensive. So a lot of times, Brian, let's say your company, there's 50 people at the company, and some insurance company comes in and ends up selling you the company, a 401k plan. That's the kind of 401k plan that very often is pretty expensive, meaning that you might be paying 1.5-2% a year on the mutual funds inside the 401k plan. Not on big companies. So if you're a Fortune 500 company, and you obviously are, I don't know the specifics of the UPS, United Parcel Service, UPS plan, but I can't imagine that it's that expensive at all. So what I'm telling you is that your plan is probably fine, and the real benefit obviously is just the match. I know that there's a match at UPS. You put in X amount of money, and they're going to match it for free, right?
I believe you get like a 5% discount.
Well, you're talking about buying the stock. You get a discount if you want to buy UPS stock, which a lot of companies have. But I'm talking about the 401k plan. Which is a little bit different. That's not buying UPS stock. So I'm actually Googling this as we talk. UPS employee 401k plan on Glassdoor.com. It gets a 3.6 out of 5 stars. So almost a 4 out of 5. And again, this is just some quick commentary that I'm reading here. They only provide a 1% match. So maybe it's not that big of a match. Yeah. And then this one says only 3.5% match, and a lot of companies are matching 6. So up to a 3% match, and then you can get an additional match that replaces the pension. So again, to some extent, there are a lot of, I'm just reading through some of these things, which is a review of their 401k plan. I don't know the exact answer, but It seems as though there's what's that
to do something like that or to invest in the Roth, like a Roth.
So here's what I would do, and we just had a call about this, and it was kind of quick. Let me reiterate this here. Once you've got your emergency fund, so let's say you have 3 months worth of cash in the bank, that if for God forbid you lose a job or there's an emergency, you can at least pay the bills, okay? Once that's done, then you've got to at least do the match. Most companies out there in a 401k plan, the most common match is what's called the 50% of 6, meaning that if you put a full 6% of your salary in, then the company will match half of that, which equates to 3% free money. So 3% of whatever your salary is. So if you make $50,000 a year, it'd be $1,500 for free. But you've got to put in $3,000 to do that. So you end up saving $4,500 a year in that scenario. That's the first step for everybody, because it's absolutely no risk, free money. You double whatever you put in, they put in, so you get 100% return on that amount of money. So that's a no-brainer. You got to do that. And then once you do up to there where they match, Brian, that's when you go do the Roth. So you can do $5,500 into a Roth. It's after-tax money. It takes a lot of discipline to do it, but that's the next best money. And then if you're fortunate enough to be able to do that, or disciplined enough to be able to do that, that's when you go back and you do the full max 401k, which is a full $18,000 for you. The full $18,000 for you. And that's $24,000 if you're 50 and up. And that's the scenario, that's the hierarchy you want to do. You do your 401k match, then you go and you do the Roth, then you go back with the next amount of money and you max out the 401k. And if you can do all that, then you start saving money in a regular good old fashioned after tax brokerage account at Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity. Let's go to the phones here. Good morning, Bill. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Hey, good morning. I'm talking about the old people. I'm 80 years old.
God bless you.
And the question is, what is the best time to withdraw the mandatory retirement accounts from your IRA?
Well, so now if you're 80, you've had, now, Bill, you've probably had to do this for a while, right? I mean, since the age of 70.
I've been doing it, but I want you to either verify it or tell me I've been screwing up.
Well, I don't know if you've been screwing it up or not, but here's the deal. Again, for all of us listening, all of you out there, when you hit 70 and a half, the government says, hey, look, you've had this money tax deferred for so many years. You got to pull it out, because we want to collect taxes. So that's the issue that Bill's facing. Now, my thought for you, Bill, would be that Most of the, you can take out income a lot of different ways. Of course, you can take it at one chunk every year. And by the way, the required minimum distribution starts out when you're 70 and a half, it's about 3.7%.
Yeah.
And then it goes up from there. And the older you get, the percentage goes up more and more every year. It's based on your December 31 value of last year. And you've got a table that you've got to follow. And that table gives you a number. And you multiply that number by your balance. And that's the number that you're forced to take out every year, or else you have a 50% excise tax on top of it. Now, the way I like to see it happen is to do it very routinely and steadily over the course of 12 months, as opposed to one chunk. And I think that allows you to preserve more.
That was my question. I have my wife's IRA. I also have a single account. So when I withdraw it, I just switch it over. That way I don't have to pay for any of the activities, you know, but I still pay taxes.
Right. So the IRS still sends you a 1099 or R?
They certainly do.
So that's the deal. I would do. Do you do it once a year, or do you just do a systematic link from the IRA into a brokerage account? Because that's the way I would like to see it happen.
My question was, the amount that they decide that you should draw from, you know, would it be better if it was lower, like shortly after you already paid your annual fee, or wait until the end of the year when your IRA has increased in value?
Oh, okay. So here's the answer to that. You don't have that choice, Bill. The bottom line here is that when you have the way those RMD rules work is that you've got to, they just take the December 31 value, whether it's up, down, sideways, and that's the number that you have to take your RMD off of.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate your show.
Well, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. 918-460-KRMG or 918-460-5764. And my point here is that, and again, this is for most of the time, whether you're doing this just to service your RMD or not, you want to let your money grow. You want to steadily take your money out over time. And here's why. Because the market is so volatile, and we have months when we're up 3% or 5%, and then we're down 3% or 5%, you don't want to end up taking your RMD, or for that matter, the money that you need to take out of an IRA anyway, all in one lump sum, if you're doing it in a month and the market does really badly, or your investment accounts are down. Because then you're in a hole, and then you're digging a hole while you're already in a hole. So you're digging a hole within a hole. So I like to see a very steady distribution schedule, which is similar. It's the reverse of dollar cost averaging. If it makes sense to systematically invest every month of your life over time, then I think the same thing works going the other direction. When you're in distribution mode, if you need $12,000 a year from an account, I'd rather see you take $1,000 every month, as opposed to a big chunk out of the beginning of the year. That allows your principal to be working for you throughout the year and allows you to just systematically take small amounts out as opposed to one big chunk and prevents you from digging a hole if you have a really bad month when it's scheduled to be withdrawn. And that's my philosophy. Again, these are just my opinions. I've been doing this for a long time. And my thought is the best way to make money last if you're in the distribution phase is to make sure that you don't have these big chunks that come out at any given time. Do it slowly, systematically, month by month over time. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss with the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. To take your calls and questions, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to go to the phone lines. Mary from Eastchester, how can I help? What's going on?
Well, fortunately, I have some very nice earnings in my equity funds, Vanguard, healthcare, total stock, etc. I'm hearing about corrections, and I'm wondering, how can I protect those profits? Like maybe pulling some out and putting it in a money market? Bonds are doing nothing. My bonds are losing money every day. Can you help me?
Well, I hope I can help, Mary. Here are a couple of my thoughts. So my questions for you are this. So much of investing, Mary, goes back to the utility of what it's for. So are you living on this money right now?
No.
You're not living on it.
No, I have sufficient pensions that take care of my day-to-day needs.
Okay. So here's my thought then, is that there's a couple ways to look at this. I think the healthiest way to look at your investments, without trying to get into this game of timing where you tiptoe in, then you tiptoe out, then you try to go back in, and that creates this circle of timing that inevitably it loses, Mary. I think what you need to really focus on is what part is predictable. And the only predictable part has to do with the steady generation of cash. So you need to think about your portfolio less about the fluctuation up and down and more about what it's generating in steady dividends. I'm going to continue on this same train here in a little bit. Let me go to news, weather, traffic, quick break, and then we'll talk more about the steadiness of your income, Mary, from Eastchester. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.